Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
With that federal election drawing near, with lots of spin and promises and political manoeuvring happening each and every day, it's easy to do, I think, one of two things. Number one, get carried away with all the hype around maybe one particular candidate or issue. Or number two, simply get confused. I'm hearing from a lot of people that are saying, I just do not know what I'm going to do at the 21st. I just don't know how I'm going to vote. How can we clear the decks and start thinking straight about the whole issue? And what might a biblically informed approach to politics look like and bring to this moment in time? Ron Sider is the founder of Evangelicals for Social Action, a think tank focused on biblical solutions to social and economic problems. He's also professor of theology, holistic ministry, and public policy at Palmer Theological Seminary, Pennsylvania. Author of a number of books, including the very well-known Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. We've spoken on the phone numerous times. Ron, it's great to catch up in person. Welcome to Australia again, and welcome to Open House again.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tia Australia have brought you out, and I think shopped you around to almost everyone. I don't know how you're still standing.
Auckland, Brisbane, Melbourne, and now Sydney.
Yeah, you've been everywhere. Before we jump into the whole topic of a kind of a biblically informed approach to politics, just your story. What I've really appreciated about your work, your books, the things that I've heard you speak on, is that you've been able to always keep almost the private and the public together. Now, whether that comes from faith, the private or the personal, maybe the personal is probably a better way to put it. The personal, the need for everyone to have that personal relationship with the Creator God through Christ. And secondly, then the social justice aspects. But also politically too, you haven't kind of strayed only to, say, the personal morality aspects of politics. Or on the other hand, to the detriment of the first, the justice aspects of politics, the community aspects of politics. Tell me about your development and how you kind of came to that worldview yourself.
I suppose in some sense all that's a mystery, but to the extent I understand some of it, I was in graduate school in the 1960s at Yale University doing a PhD in Reformation history, and I began to sense a call as an evangelical Christian to be engaged in economic issues, justice for the poor and racial justice and peacemaking, and that call grew stronger. I resolved at that time that to the extent that I had anything to do with a resurgent movement in the Christian community of concern for justice and peacemaking, that I would ground it in solid biblical theology and that I wouldn't lose a concern for sharing Christ as I talked about engagement with public life. You know, I think that one of the confusions around is that persons are just complex machines, and so all we need to do to change behavior is to change the external inputs. That's not true. All the great religions, and certainly Christianity, has said that people are spiritual beings as well as material beings. And if that's true, then they need inner spiritual transformation and they need the right socioeconomic structures to have a wholesome life. And it's one of the tragedies when people get focused only on the one or only on the other.
Mm. And what was the catalyst while you're at Yale to actually start sensing this call?
I don't know. We were living, we were renting an apartment from an African-American couple, and that was certainly part of it. We sat with that couple the night that Martin Luther King was killed and experienced their anguish and pain. So that was part of it. I think I was reading the Bible, and the Bible has a lot to say about economic justice.
Dangerous thing to do.
It is indeed.
Well, let's talk about then how that applies then to the political calling that actually everybody has. And in this case, we're talking particularly people of faith, the call that you actually have to engage in the political process. Now, some would say, well, hold on right there. There's a question mark. Should people of faith even be involved in this worldly thing called politics and just simply focus on changing the heart so that then people can actually live right? Why do you think Christians should actually be involved in the political process?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is practical and one's theological. The practical reason is that politics simply affects the lives of billions of people. When William Wilberforce, the great British parliamentarian in the late 18th century, early 19th century, worked for 30 years to persuade the British Parliament, against its economic self-interest, really, of the country, to abolish the slave trade and then abolish slavery, he affected the lives of literally millions and millions of people for good. Economic justice gets worked out in my own context through politics because of political decisions in the last year. We now have 32 million more Americans covered by health insurance. You know, that's more than all the people that live in Canada or Australia. Mm-hmm. So politics matters. Religious freedom has emerged. Democratic process has emerged because of political activity. So if we love our neighbor and want to work for their well-being, it's clear that one of the ways you do that is by improving the socioeconomic structures around them, and you do that in part through politics. The theological reason is that Christians claim that Jesus Christ is Lord, Lord of all of life, and that means, at the very least, that they need to let him be in charge of every part of their life, not just their sexual lives, but their business practices, not just their personal family life or Sunday morning, but also their political life. Mm-hmm. I think it's true to say that biblical faith tells us that Jesus cares how we vote as well as how we pray. So for those two reasons, it's crucial. Now, it's also essential that we don't overestimate or exaggerate the importance of politics. Politics isn't the only way we change the world. Being good moms and dads and being good school teachers and business people, creating jobs that people need, all of those things are important ways that we change the world. So we need to have just the right understanding of the significance, but also the limitations of political engagement.
Mm. Open House is what you're listening to right across the nation. Ron Sider is with us, author of Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger and numerous other books, and from Evangelicals for Social Action, a think tank looking at biblical solutions to social and economic problems. He's the best person, I think, in town at the moment to talk about how to engage politically with a biblically informed kind of worldview. I want to get on to how we do that in just a second, but just touch on a few more of those things to avoid first, because a lot of people, and many people listening, will actually say, oh yeah, Christians involved in politics, well, that always means an extreme right position. Sometimes it actually means an extreme left position in some contexts as well. What are the things to avoid when it comes to that engagement? Then we'll get to the pros.
Well, I think several things are crucial. One is to understand the limitations as well as the importance of political engagement. A second is to engage in politics in a way that's truthful. Sometimes Christians get involved in politics and they lie and distort their opponents' views in tragic kinds of ways, and in that way discredit Jesus Christ. Mm. I think we also should have humility. We should understand that politics is so complex that people of goodwill, both committed Christians and other people, can legitimately disagree and not be acting in bad faith or not trying to be nasty or cruel or whatever, but they simply see different pieces of the reality and they come to different conclusions. We should be humble enough to say that we might not be right. In fact, we've got to be pretty sure we're not right on everything. I like to say that I try to ground my politics in normative biblical values and careful study of the world, but if I get my study of either one of those things wrong, then I'll undoubtedly make mistakes. And so help me correct my concrete political conclusions.
And when it comes to, say, the local church pastor as well getting involved and obviously wanting to encourage his or her flock to get involved in the political process, what are some of the guidelines there?
Well, I really think that the local church pastor or the denominational leader should not, with any regularity, make political pronouncements, endorse candidates, or even endorse concrete legislation. What I think that the local pastor should do, and the denomination or network of churches should do, is to help all of the people in that congregation develop a framework for thinking in a biblically informed, factually grounded way about politics. And then they should invite, encourage individuals in the congregation to be engaged politically in the different parties as they feel led and called. I think that a congregation is an ideal place to model a civil debate. I mean, if you've got in your congregation members of Labor and the Liberal Party and Family First Party and the Greens, then let them talk about the issues and let them talk about it in a way that is respectful and accurate about each other's viewpoints. We ought to be able to feed back somebody else who disagrees with us, feed back their views, and do that in such an accurate way that they say, yes, that's what I mean. So we can disagree about it, but we first of all need to be honest with each other's views.
So that's interesting, isn't it? Because in the past, you know, it's kind of had a checkered history, but there really were those church leaders who actually did make very firm pronouncements in the past for a particular legislation or even for particular candidates.
Yeah, Jerry Falwell in the U.S., basically said that if there was any serious Christian in the U.S., he would be voting for George Bush in 2004. Now, that's just off the wall, I think, in terms of irresponsibility. You can talk about issues and talk about how one platform is closer to biblical norms than another. That's legit. But to endorse specific candidates, especially to say that if you're a serious Christian or a serious Jew, I think he said both, you know, you would be voting for one candidate.
And where then is the kind of that prophetic call to kind of name things as they are and kind of, you know, bring truth to power and say, well, look, what so-and-so is actually standing for is completely wrong.
Well, I think you can do that in terms of issues. You can say that, biblical understanding of the nature of persons leads you to take the sanctity of human life very seriously. And when you do that, we really should say no to euthanasia and to abortion, except under extreme circumstances. You can say that biblical faith says we have to care about justice for the poor and peacemaking, and you can challenge concrete legislation or political leaders in terms of whether or not they are, in fact, living out those kinds of values. But that's different from endorsing a candidate.
Ron Sider is our guest on Open House. You've got a thought? I'd love to hear it. 1-300-40-2020. We're talking about thinking biblically about politics and how we can go about doing that in a kind of a Christian, biblically informed kind of way. Before you mentioned kind of two things just in passing about having a biblical idea about politics, but also having a good knowledge of the world or of the actual issues as well. They're kind of the two pivotal points around which you actually think this is a way we can go forward.
I actually develop in my book on politics, which I wrote a couple of years ago, the suggestion or the argument that there are at least three major components in any actual political decision, whether you vote for Liberal or Labor or whatever in this upcoming election, or whether you favor this piece of legislation or not. And I think the first part is a normative framework, some set of value judgments. You have to have some understanding of who persons are and how valuable they are and what justice is and so on. Now, I want to get those normative values primarily from biblical revelation. But that's not enough because there's nothing in the Bible that I've ever found about whether or not we should deal with global warming or build nuclear reactors for peaceful energy purposes or, you know, whatever. You have to study the world as well, and the world is complex. That means studying economics and sociology and politics and history, because all of that feeds in. And so I want to put together those two things, a normative biblical framework and a careful study of the world, and together they create my political philosophy, which is the third component. Now, the reason you need political philosophy is that every time you want to decide who to vote for in this coming election or whatever, you can't spend 5 years and go back and study all the Bible again. You can't spend another 5 years studying history and economics again. You have to have a roadmap, a handy guide. And that's exactly what a political philosophy is. But that philosophy should come from your normative biblical framework, if you're a Christian, and from your careful study of the world. Mm-hmm. And you should go on, with
building
that
it.
Study, yep. So your political philosophy should be growing. You should hold it tentatively, but with some confidence, and wherever anybody can help you show that, help you see that you haven't done your biblical analysis right or your study of the world right, then you should be quite ready to change your political philosophy. Mine would be pro-family, pro-life, pro-poor, pro-creation care, pro-racial justice, pro-peacemaking, and you apply that to any given piece of legislation that you're wrestling with or any decision about voting for this candidate or that candidate.
Yeah. Now, before we leave that, this whole notion of the Christian worldview and what it actually does bring as to that normative framework, outline what you think the biblical message actually does provide us with, the building blocks for that normative biblical kind of base.
Well, just the biblical story, the true story of creation and fall and redemption through the people of Israel and then Christ and on to Christ's return, all of that tells you a great deal. It's relevant to politics. It tells you where history's going. It tells you about the amazing dignity of persons made in God's image, invited to live forever with the creator of the galaxies. Persons are not just tools of the state. They're not just complex machines. They're spiritual and material beings made in the image of God. That says a lot about crucial things in political life, human rights, sanctity of human life in terms of abortion, euthanasia, and so on. And then I want to also go through the scriptures and develop what I call biblical paradigms. I want to know what the Bible tells us about the nature of economic justice, the nature of religious freedom, and so on. One of the things that the Bible says with amazing clarity is that God's on the side of the poor, that God measures societies by what we do to the people on the bottom, that God demands economic justice, demands that his people, if they're really God's people at all, are on the side of the poor in the way God is. And so that shapes one's political engagement in profound ways if one of the crucial things that you're supposed to be doing is speaking not just for your economic self-interest, but rather for justice for everyone, especially the people on the bottom.
Yes. There's a wonderful article that you've written on this whole topic that I found online during the week, and you kind of brought down that a handful of biblical principles to the special dignity and sanctity of every human being, freedom of belief, the centrality of the family to society, justice for the poor, and racial justice you actually incorporated too. And you mentioned that phrase before, pro-life, pro-poor, pro-family, pro-racial justice, pro-freedom, pro-peace, and pro-creation care. What happens then when you need to compromise? Somewhere you've got to compromise because you won't find one party giving all.
Well, I want to step back one step first and say that if you want to be a Christian in politics, then surely central to your starting point must be the question, what does the Bible tell us God cares about? What's happened in the United States, as you know, with the religious right, is that they focused rather exclusively, not entirely, but in a rather central way on just a couple issues, abortion, euthanasia, the sanctity of human life issues, and second, on marriage, sexuality, family kinds of issues. Now, I essentially agreed with them on those issues, but I said that's not a biblical enough agenda, because if you look at what the Bible says, it's clear God cares about sanctity of human life, and he cares about justice for the poor, and he cares about sexual integrity, and racial justice, and the family, and creation care. And so having a biblically balanced agenda as your overall framework is, it seems to me, the only faithful starting point for Christians in politics. And so often Christians have not done that. There's always been a kind of left-wing Christian that talked about economic justice and creation care, but didn't care about family and sanctity of human life, or right-wing Christians who were on the other side. And that's simply letting secular ideology rather than biblical faith shape our essential political philosophy.
Good point.
So I start with that commitment to a biblically balanced agenda. Now, that immediately causes problems in my context and yours, because we haven't had in American history, at least for a long, long time, a candidate for president who, in fact, reflects all of that rather regularly. Democrats have been closer on some issues, as far as I understand, and Republicans have been closer on others. So one has to look at the different platforms one has to compare each of those platforms with one's biblically balanced agenda, and then try to answer the question, which of these platforms, and also which do you think they'll really do, not just what they said, which of those comes closer on balance to that whole biblically balanced agenda.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy. Honest, committed Christians come to different conclusions. We should be respectful when that happens, not call them names or say they're in league with Satan, but be ready to challenge and, mm-hmm. and say, you know, why are you taking this stand? Why are you with this party if they don't seem to care much about justice for the poor, or if they don't seem to care much, a different party, about sanctity of human life? So we challenge and we wrestle, but it seems to me it's crucial, if we're going to be Christian at all in our politics, to start with that biblically balanced political agenda.
Mm-hmm. And then the party on balance that actually gets as many of those as possible to some degree?
Yeah, or you can even put it negatively. Which of the candidates will do the less damage? Or more possibly, hopefully, which of them overall is closer to that whole agenda?
Yes. Well, that's certainly helpful, because that's a big thing too, because it certainly is a hard one. The other thing would be to talk about in relation to this conversation is also Christians involved in the parties, and to what degree, either as candidates or actually as involved members in those parties, and to what degree they can have influence on the party as a whole, i.e. take somebody like the Labour Party, and actually you become a member of the Labour Party, and you as a Christian agree with certain things that the Labour Party holds for at this particular election and a handful of things that they don't. To what degree you have influence then to affect those things that don't line up with biblical values. From your experience and from the various political personalities you've known and spoken to over the years, is that a realistic option?
Yes, sometimes. I think that at some points in time, particular parties are more open to dissenting voices and to specifically Christian voices than they are at other times. And take the specific issue of the Democratic Party in the U.S., and abortion, sanctity of human life issues. The Democratic Party has been very strongly pro-choice, very much in favor of legalized abortion. But there has always been a small, largely Catholic, Democratic members of the Congress that are very strongly pro-life, and also economic justice and peacemaking and so on. In the last several years, and this is certainly true under President Obama, they were consciously making space for both evangelicals and Catholics to have an alternative viewpoint within the Democratic Party. That's not always the case, and there's certainly a strong, pretty rigidly secular component of the Democratic Party, but certainly President Obama understands that that's only one part of the party, and that there are very committed Christians, even very pro-life Christians, that are in the Democratic Party. And analogous kinds of things happen in the Republican Party. So it varies from time to time. I would say 10 years ago, the Democratic Party was far less open to that evangelical and Catholic voice than it is today.
Okay, so it can actually happen. And so I guess the thing would be that there would be a certain number of Christians that are really called to just be there and stay at their post, really, for a period of time, even though there might be some things in their own party that they rigidly disagree with.
Yes, and they should earn respect and hopefully influence in the party in such a way that the party at least broadens to the extent that there's a legitimate range of views within the party. Ideally, you'd even be able to change the party's official position. Mm-hmm. But I think politics is sufficiently complex that we should expect that very committed Christians and very devout people of other faiths and people of goodwill who are secular, that we will come to different conclusions, concrete conclusions. And so we should respect each other. I think that means that Christians should be in most or all of the different political parties, trying to push every one of them in the right direction. It'll mean pushing the Greens in a pro-life, pro-family direction. It'll mean pushing the Liberals in a economic justice, care for the environment, mm-hmm. kind of direction. But I think we should be in those different parties.
Well, Ron, thank you for your time, and it's been great catching up with you, and certainly a lot of food for thought there. Appreciate it.
Good. Glad to be with you.
Ron Sider from the Evangelicals for Social Action, author of numerous books, including Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger and The Scandal of Evangelical Politics.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.